to the podcast. This is Ron's Amazing Stories, where we play scary stories so you don't have to. If you read this week's blog, you already know what's coming. No, but you're close. We have a strange story sure to scare you from the OTR series, Inner Sanctum.
Wow!
We also have a listener's ghost story from High Wycombe, England.
What's that you say?
And then we end it all with a very old Japanese horror story. But before we do any of that, let's solve this 5-minute mystery with Dracula.
Another 5-minute mystery.
This 5-minute mystery is being brought to you by Dracula. If you want to live forever, then why not do vampire? We live in a pretty fast-paced world now, and getting around to everything is pretty tough. Vampires don't have this problem, you see, so go see your local vampire today.
Martha, I have something to ask you.
Darling, it's been such a lovely afternoon here on the mountain.
Martha, I want a divorce.
Divorce?
Yes, there is someone else. I need my freedom.
No, I won't give it to you.
I thought that would be your answer, my dear.
Then why did you ask me?
Because, Martha, I did not want to kill you.
Howard?
Yes, Martha. I've got to be rid of you. That's why I brought you to the mountain. There is a precipice over there. It is a long fall, my dear.
I might as well begin with a description of the events leading up to your wife's falling over the precipice.
As you wish, Sergeant. It was such a lovely afternoon that Martha, my wife, and I decided to come up here to the mountain. We brought some lunch with us and planned to make a day of it.
About what time was that, sir?
It was about 3 o'clock.
I see. Would you go on, please?
About 4 o'clock, it began to thunder, and very shortly thereafter, lightning and rain started.
Did you find shelter?
Yes, we were rather fortunate to find a cave about 100 yards from here, on the west side of the mountain.
What time did it stop raining?
About an hour later, Sergeant.
What did you do then?
This is quite a lot of questioning, Sergeant. Is it all necessary?
Yes, I'm afraid it is. I hope you don't object. We're almost through.
No, not if it is necessary. Well, to continue. We left the cave and continued to the crest of the mountain. As we got to the top, my wife called my attention to a rainbow, which had suddenly appeared to the west behind the sun.
And that was about 5 o'clock?
Yes. Well, when Martha saw the rainbow, she suggested, as a sort of joke, that we try to follow to the end of the rainbow. You know the pot of gold at the rainbow's end?
Yes, of course. What happened after she suggested it?
I laughed and tried to dissuade Martha from the idea, but she began running down the incline and waving for me to follow her.
Did you?
No, I shouted for her to turn back, but she was running downhill too quickly to stop. Suddenly, she slipped on some loose rock and fell down. She turned over and over and rolled right off the precipice. It was horrible.
There was no way you could have helped her?
Of course not. Are you insinuating...
No, my mountain climbing friend. I'm merely saying that I don't believe your story. It's a lie.
How does the state policeman know that Howard lied in the story of how his wife met her death? In just a moment, we'll know. But first...
Okay, is it me or does this guy sound like Dracula? I want to suck your blood. It seems to me he could have solved the problem in so many other ways. The cliff toss is so langweilig. But how did the state trooper know? I think it has to do with the vampire's worst enemy, the sun. Let's go see, shall we? Oh, and this 5-minute mystery is being brought to you by Dracula.
And now, back to our story.
Howard, your story contained one rather obvious flaw which condemns it as a lie. You told me just a few minutes ago that after the storm cleared, you and your wife discovered a rainbow to the west, behind the sun, which, my friend, is an impossibility. A rainbow is always formed opposite the sun by the reflection of its rays.
Sun don't shine backwards. Such a simple mistake. You would think that Dracula would know better. This 5-minute mystery was brought to you by Dracula. And if you want to live forever, why not do Vampire? We live in a pretty fast-paced world now, and getting around everything is tough. So, see your local Vampire today. Got a couple emails to get to today. The first comes from Melvin Myers of South Texas. Melvin wants to know, I checked out your new website and it seems just fine to me. If you close out the current one, does that mean you won't be doing a weekly blog anymore? Well, in case you listeners don't know that I've created a new website, I have. I recently had troubles with my WordPress provider and am leaving. I put out that you could preview a possible replacement at ronsamazingstories.libsyn.com. I will have that link in the show notes. One of the problems with the Libsyn site is that it doesn't handle text-only posts very well. So, to answer your question, Melvin, if I decide to go with Libsyn, I would probably include the blog with the show notes or find another place to post them. The blog will stick around in one form or another. I actually enjoy writing it each week. Our second email comes from Sebastian Wells, with an E, from High Wycombe in the UK. How about that? Greetings, Ron's Amazing Stories. I have a tale for your listeners that I want to share. I hope you find it as amazing as many of the stories that you share with us. Back in 1997, my wife and I were working as relief management for a brewery. We would live and work in whichever pub we were sent to, usually covering holidays or filling gaps between tenants. Whilst in one pub, my wife and I noticed odd things happening. We would walk into a room and I would feel that something had moved or noises were heard. We both laughed this off at first, then the beer tap stopped working. I would assume the keg was empty, and I would head to the cellar to change it, only to find it full and that the gas had been shut off. Also, things like keg mallets would vanish, or cap keys would go missing, only to find them somewhere else later on. One night after closing the pub, my wife was in the bar and I went upstairs. I had heard footsteps and was thinking a customer was still in the pub and in our private quarters. I unlocked the door and saw a man in brown trousers with a cream-striped shirt. He had his sleeves rolled up and he looked like he was carrying something up the stairs. I shouted at him and followed. Reaching the top of the stairs, I searched the rooms and there was nobody there. In fact, there was nobody else in the pub. I immediately went cold, and then I felt fear burn through my body like a surge. Thinking about it now, I can picture the scene perfectly, and it still makes me feel uncomfortable. The next night, I described him to a group of regular customers at the pub. More than a couple told me it was the old landlord from years ago. They even described the clothes he was wearing. They said that he lived for the place and the neighborhood. He would walk around the area watching for trouble and helping those in need. Most people I've told have either laugh or say that I imagined it. People who do believe me tend to tell me about their experiences. On the whole, I don't tell people as that it makes me feel silly at times. The experience changed me from being a complete skeptic to now being open-minded. I still tell myself I don't believe in ghosts,
but also I think there's a lot we don't understand about this world. There is no other explanation to what happened. I've thought about it for such a long time now, and I've come to the conclusion that I saw a ghost. Well, Sebastian, I think you saw one too. It's a pretty cut and dried story. Also, you do have the bulk of the neighborhood confirming it. I want to thank you for sharing it with us, and for the record, it is amazing. OTR tale for this time follows that last story quite nicely. It comes from one of the most famous dark radio series of all time, The Inner Sanctum. This anthology featured stories of mystery, terror, and suspense. Its cheeky introductions were quite unique and original for the time. The early programs were hosted by Raymond and his many morbid jokes and playful puns. Its campy comedy notwithstanding, the stories were usually effective chillers, mixing horror and humor in equal doses. The series aired from 1941 to 1952 and was created by Hyman Brown. Out of more than 500 programs broadcast, about 200 remain in circulation. Our story is called The Skull That Walked. It tells the tale of a curse that takes its wrath out on the owners of a family mansion who disturb its rest. It comes from the Inner Sanctum and first hit the airwaves on April 15, 1944.
Good evening. This is Sergeant X. They say that ghosts and the like just don't exist. That when a person passes on, he just lies quietly, not bothering another soul, so to speak. You believe that, don't you? Mm-hmm. Well, did you ever hear about the skull that walked? No? Then listen, my friends, to the Mystery Playhouse. I guess superstition's a pretty hard thing to down completely, isn't it? I mean, under certain circumstances, almost anybody can get the creeps and get them good. I guess most of us are a little bit afraid of the unknown. For instance, taking a midnight stroll through a graveyard isn't exactly your idea of fun, is it? And I don't suppose you'd particularly go into ecstasies if you happened to witness a good gory murder, either. Well, there's a fellow I know who thinks this all comes under the heading of good, clean fun. His hobby is horror, and he likes to tell stories along those lines. I think he has one for you right now. Wait till I try this door here.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum. This is Raymond, your host. Well, come in, won't you? Yes, how are your spirits this evening? Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Our spirits are fine, too. Would you like to see them? Oh, it's no trouble at all. Now, which would you care to see first? The spirit or the body? Ah, well, the body is right over there on the floor. And the spirit is right next to it. Oh, you can't see it. I forgot to tell you, you have to be one in order to see one. Shall we get started? Well, naturally. Now, turn out the lights.
No, you won't see any ghosts in the dark, but
they'll be able to see you. Far from town, there are a group of three hills. On the summit of the highest of them is the Cruz estate, owned by two brothers, Arthur and Carl. At this moment, Carl and his wife, Lucille, are digging a hole at the entrance of the estate, planting young
poplar trees.
Carl, I think it's deep enough.
Oh, I think we ought to go a little deeper down.
Oh, here comes Spears.
Spears? You're digging?
Yes, we're going to plant a whole row of Lombardy poplars.
Mm-hmm. You mean right here?
Yep. We're going to line both sides of the road.
Well, perhaps you'd better let me do it. I'm your caretaker. I should do the gardening. Oh.
Spears, you look upset. What's the matter?
Well, where you're digging is an old Indian burial spot. There's a curse on it.
Oh, don't worry about it, Spears.
You don't believe it?
Of course not. Lucille and I don't go in for superstition.
Yes, but it's no superstition, sir. It's a...
You hit a rock.
Uh-huh. Oh, that sounds like a rock. It's a little hollow. I'll dig it up, whatever it is. Yeah. What?
Carl! It's a skull.
Yes. A skull. Spears is right. This place must have been an old Indian burial ground.
Please, put it back.
No, keep it.
Carl, perhaps you'd better put it back.
No. Please, please bury it again, Mr. Cruz. It will bring bad luck to all of us.
No, Spears, that's just a silly superstition.
Well, what about the rest of the skeleton?
Well, there doesn't seem to be one. No, just a skull. You bring it into the house, will you, Spears?
But, I'd rather not.
All right, I'll take it in myself. But don't either of you mention this to my brother, Arthur. He's terribly scared of things like this, and he's just gotten over his nervous breakdown.
Carl, perhaps you should put the skull back.
Well, Lucille, you're not being taken in by this hokum about curses, are you?
Oh, that sounded like my wife, Mary. She was cleaning the windows.
Good heavens. She fell out of the window.
Mary. Well, she's unconscious. Please do something. You must do something.
I'm afraid there's nothing we can do, Spears. She hit her head against a rock. She's dead.
How, Spears?
He's quieted down.
I can't understand it. There's only one rock underneath the window, and Mary hit that. That one rock. There isn't even a pebble around for yards.
Well, don't go imagining things again, Arthur.
Spears kept talking about a curse.
Spears believes in pixies and gremlins, too, don't forget.
Well, I feel rather funny about it all.
Oh, Carl, maybe you'd better switch some more lamps on. This living room feels gloomy.
Oh, let's cut this nonsense out.
Wait. You hear anything?
Oh? Oh, I don't.
Yes. Something is coming from the ceiling.
What's coming from the ceiling? I don't hear...
What is it?
It must be the beams. I sometimes do that from the heat.
It's not the beams. It's too regular a sound.
What room is directly above us?
It's an old bedroom. We use it as a storeroom now. It hasn't been opened in years.
There's something up there.
Of course there is. A lot of old things from years back, Lucille.
Did you put the skull in the storeroom?
Yes. Yes, I did.
What are you two whispering of... Coming down the stairs.
We'll take a look and settle this. So far.
Look!
At your feet, Carl. The skull. How did it get down here? It came down the steps.
Seems to be looking up at us.
A skull. How did it get into the house?
Carl found it while digging. Spears said it belonged to some Indian.
Spears was right. There is a curse on the house. We'll all be killed. I'm leaving. I can't stand it.
Well, Carl, what are you going to do with the skull?
We'll lock it up in the closet. Lock it.
Carl, you'd better bury it again.
No, I can't do that, Lucille. If I do, it means I... believe in all this tommy rot about ghosts.
Well, then suppose you tell me how a skull could open a door and then come bouncing down the steps.
I don't know. Maybe someone's playing a trick on us, dear.
What happened to Mary was no trick, Carl. Nor is this, and you know it.
Well, whatever it is, I'm not going to bury it. We'll keep it locked up in the closet.
Oh, Mr. Cruz.
Yes. What is it, Spears?
Well, It isn't my place to tell you, sir, but I...
You're referring to the skull, aren't you?
Yes, sir.
Well, it won't bother us anymore. The whole thing's some queer trick. I've got it safely hidden in this closet. I'm putting a lock on the outside.
But the lock isn't going to do any good, sir. It will break through the door, just like the last time.
I don't think anything like that can happen again. I'm the only one that has a key to this lock. If the skull wants to break out, it'll have to come to me for the key. How are you feeling, Arthur?
I'll never feel right in this house again.
Oh, nonsense. Why don't you put a light on? Arthur, it's morbid sitting here in the dark by yourself.
We're all going to die.
Don't be ridiculous, Arthur.
Where is the skull?
Where it can't get out. Tomorrow I'll take it into town and let the police look at it.
Tomorrow will be too late.
Look, I'm getting tired of this. You've got to get hold of yourself, Arthur. You'll go completely to pieces.
You think I'm a coward, don't you?
Oh, Arthur, no. Well, you're not a coward. You're just a victim of your own exaggerated imagination.
Wait. There's someone at the door.
I'll open it.
Who is it?
I don't know. No one came in.
Something came in. For heaven's sake, put the light on.
The skull. I can't believe it.
You can't believe it.
There it is, grinning at you from the floor, but you can't believe it. You don't believe in these things.
I put a lock on the door.
Locks aren't going to help. Nothing is going to help. We're all going to die.
It's an hour later now. Arthur has gotten over his hysteria, but he is still terrified.
I'm not going to spend another night in this house, Carl.
But, Arthur, there's got to be some logical explanation.
I'm not in the least bit curious. I just want to get out of here tonight.
I'm going to go with him, Carl.
Lucille. Well, perhaps we'll bury it again. We'll put it back in the same place we found
it. That won't do any good. It's too late now.
Don't be ridiculous. If it wants anything at all, it wants to get buried again. I'm sure all this mysterious business will come to an end as soon as we bury it.
The house won't ever be the same.
Oh, stop it. Both of you. You're acting like a couple of scared children. We'll put the skull back where we found it, and we won't be bothered by it anymore. Spears! Spears!
Yes, Mr. Cruz.
This skull. Let's take it out, bury it in the same place where we found it.
Oh, I'm glad you reconsidered, sir. It's the only way.
I don't seem to remember the spot.
Well, it's on the other side, sir, right near the entrance road.
Oh, yes.
Yes, sir. Here it is.
Yeah. But the hole we dug, it's not here.
I filled it in, sir.
Oh, well, we'd better dig it up.
Yes, sir.
If you'll hold the skull, I'll dig it open. We might as well do it right. I know exactly how deep it was.
If you don't mind, Mr. Cruz, I'd rather not touch the skull.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, that's about right. Now we'll put the thing back.
Well, it doesn't seem to want to go back.
Oh, I just missed dropping it into the hole. Hold the flashlight down here.
Yes, sir.
Well, that does it.
Oh, I hope we'll have no more trouble.
Well, Carl, did you bury it?
Yes, same place. That's all. Forget about it, shall we?
Maybe it's easy for you, Carl. But I won't forget about it for a long time.
Neither will I. I'll be having nightmares about it for months.
I don't know what's gotten into you, Lucille. You were never easily frightened.
I'm not. But skulls that roll by themselves give me a funny feeling.
Mm. Well, look, come on, let's play cards. Huh? Hearts? We don't need more than three hands to play. We'll forget the whole crazy business, okay?
Well, I might as well.
All right, deal the cards.
Okay. You. Yeah. Yeah, well, we're getting back to normalcy, huh?
Arthur, pass your card.
That wind came up suddenly.
Who's first?
You are, Lucille.
Oh, all right. Nine of diamonds.
Your go, Arthur. Come on, Arthur, throw a card.
I think I hear something.
Of course you do. The wind.
No, I thought I heard a rapping sound.
Look, just pay attention to the game and stop listening for sounds.
Here's my card.
You threw a club, diamonds, the suit.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you hear that?
What was that?
It's only the wind blowing the shutter. Oh, come on, let's play. Throw a card, Arthur.
There's someone at the door.
It isn't the wind. Someone's outside.
All right, I'll open the door.
No, don't open it.
Please, Lucille. Sitting here frightened isn't going to do us any good. We've got to open the door.
Don't open it, Carl.
Who is it, Carl?
What? It's nothing. It's just the wind.
You're lying. Your face is white as a sheet.
I know. It's the skull. It's come back.
I tell you, it's nothing. It's just the wind. Nobody was there.
I'll see for myself.
Oh, Mrs. Cruz, I didn't hear you knock.
I didn't. I want to talk to you, Spears.
Yes, Mrs. Cruz, but it's rather late.
You've been up late before.
Oh, yes, but it's just that I'm tired tonight. I don't mean to be rude.
You've been doing a lot of night work?
What are you referring to, Mrs. Cruz?
Spears, you don't really believe in skulls that move around by themselves, do you?
Well, I warned your husband about it. It's a curse.
Is it part of a curse for a skull to use a trowel to unbury itself? Your trowel?
My trowel? Oh, you're mistaken.
No, I'm not. I just came from there.
Why would I want to do anything like that?
Mm-hmm. Why? That's why I'm here. I'd like to know why.
Please, Mrs. Cruz, I'm tired. We'll talk about it in the morning.
We'll talk about it now, Spears, right now.
Get out of my room.
All right. I'm going straight to the police. I've got the trowel. We'll see if the skull left any fingerprints.
You won't do that, Mrs. Cruz.
Oh, yes, I will. All right, Spears, just sit right where you are. I'll shoot.
Oh, please. Put the gun down.
Start talking.
Well, it's all a mistake.
If you don't start talking, I'll shoot. In self-defense. Did you dig up that skull?
Well,
Did you?
Yes. Yes, I did.
And you rolled the skull down the steps. The first night it was in this house, didn't you?
Well, it was only a joke.
And you also managed to open the closet.
Yes, but I...
Whose skull is it?
I don't know.
You're lying. That skull has something to do with you. I checked up on it. Your first wife disappeared. Perhaps the police can identify the skull.
Oh, please, don't go to the police. Well, it was my first wife, Jane. I killed her. I didn't want your husband to bring the skull to the police, so I tried to scare all of you away from here as the safest measure.
Go on.
Yes. Wait a minute. Who rolled the skull into Arthur's room? It wasn't me. It must
That's
have been...
That's right. It was me. Perhaps you and I can work things out. I tried to frighten my dear brother-in-law Arthur away so that I can have complete ownership of the entire estate. You see, Arthur is leaving tonight.
Yeah. Perhaps we can help each other. No one has to know of our little conversation.
No one is going to know.
Well, now that we've both accomplished our purpose, maybe it would be the best thing to bury the skull again.
Yes. We'll do it now.
Well, here we are.
Let's hurry. They'll miss me if I'm out here too long.
Perhaps we'd better dig another hole.
Oh, it doesn't matter.
Will you hold the skull?
No, I'd rather not.
You haven't suddenly gotten squeamish, have you, Mrs. Cruz?
Put the skull in the ground and dig that hole.
What's the matter?
The skull. Look at it.
What about it?
It's moving. Can't you see?
Well, it's just the wind pushing it.
Hurry up.
There. Yes. There. It's deep enough now. Hand me the skull. Oh, I forgot. You won't touch it. All right, I'll get it myself.
What's the matter?
My hand. I can't get my hand out. The jaws clamped down.
Your hand.
Please. Help me. You've got to help me. Do something. You've got to do something. It won't let go.
I can't.
Oh, please, Jane. Jane, darling. I didn't mean to kill you. You're my wife. I didn't mean it. It was an accident. Please believe me. I'll do anything. Anything. Oh, no. No, Jane. No. Oh.
How is she, Carl?
It's pretty bad. The doctor says it's hopeless. There's nothing more he can do. Her hair, it's turned completely white. She's just out of her mind.
Horrible.
Spears died this morning. He never recovered consciousness. Died of fright.
Everything else seems to make sense, but I don't understand how the skull could have clamped its jaws on his hand.
When he picked it up, he must have picked it up upside down. The lower jaw, which swings on a hinge, came down. He was so frightened that his hand froze to the skull. Spears was just frightened to death.
I want that skull. Yes, sir, I want it as a knocker for the inner sanctum door. Good night. Pleasant dream.
Well, thank you very much, friend Raymond. Your sense of humor is really quite refreshing. That is, in a ghoulish sort of way. We'll be trying your creaking door again soon for some more laughs. Well, right now, let's look in on the green room where the players are rehearsing the next performance in the Mystery Playhouse. Follow me, please. Come.
Come on, let's get out of this mob and find some less crowded joint, huh?
Oh, take it easy. Let's have at least one drink here, and now we finally got to the bar.
Ouch! Ooh, what the heck?
What's the matter, Dexter? Somebody step on your corns?
Oh, no, it felt like someone stuck a needle in my hand, but the way I'm wedged in here, I can't even lift my hand to see.
Probably a pen scratched you, with all these women about.
Hey, Dexter, according to the clock on the wall there, Quartz is being executed right this second.
Say, it's kind of close in here. Let's get out and get some fresh air.
Take a look in the mirror over the bar, Stanley. That woman behind me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Dexter's been muttering about. The brunette in black. Smooth. Hey, do you know her?
What makes you think I know her?
Well, I thought she nodded at you.
Just my natural good looks. I never saw her before in my life.
It's kind of close in here. Let's get out of... hardly breathe.
Oh, stop clowning, Dexter. Quit leaning on me.
What's eating, Dexter? Just because he's going to be married in 3 days.
You shouldn't have mentioned marriage, Stanley. From the way he's leaning on me, he must have fainted.
That's order fright.
Come on, Dexter. Take your weight off him. Of all I can do is take care of myself. And this... Say, Stanley. He has fainted or something. No kidding.
Oh, Dexter's a practical joke.
No, this isn't a joke. He's all gray about the lips.
Huh?
Look at him. I mean, hold him. He's falling.
Oh, Dexter.
Dexter, what's the matter? Dexter!
Well, it's too bad our time is all up or we could stay around and find out. I'm afraid you'll have to wait until next time when we present the entire story of Death in the Doghouse. This is Sergeant X closing the doors of the Mystery Playhouse. Good night. Sleep tight.
That little skull sure wrecked havoc. Or did it? Could it have all been a work of the mind? You know, that's what I love about old-time radio. Many times, you get to decide what it all means. So let me ask you, oh listeners of Ron's Amazing Stories, what did this story mean to you? The Inner Sanctum's familiar and famed audio trademark was the eerie creaking door which opened and closed the broadcast. Hyman Brown got the idea from a door in the basement that squeaked like heck. The door was actually made by a rusty desk chair. The program did originally intend to use a door, but on its first use, it didn't squeak. Undaunted, Brown grabbed a nearby chair, sat in it, turned, causing a hair-raising squeak. The chair was used from then on as a sound prop. On at least one memorable occasion, a staffer innocently repaired and oiled the chair, thus forcing the sound man to mimic the squeak orally. True story.
As read by Amazing Stories, read by amazing people.
This time on As Read By, we have the tale of Yuki Ono by Lacadio Hearn. It comes to us from the folks at LibriVox.org and is read by Rasputin.
In a village of Musashi Province, there lived two woodcutters, Mozaku and Minokichi. At the time of which I am speaking, Mozaku was an old man, and Minokichi, his apprentice, was a lad of 18 years. Every day, they went together to a forest situated about 5 miles from their village. On the way to that forest, there is a wide river to cross, and there is a ferry boat. Several times, a bridge was built where the ferry is, but the bridge was each time carried away by a flood. No common bridge can resist the current there when the river rises. Mozaku and Minokichi were on their way home one very cold evening when a great snowstorm overtook them. They reached the ferry, and they found that the boatman had gone away, leaving his boat on the other side of the river. It was no day for swimming, and the woodcutters took shelter in the ferryman's hut, thinking themselves lucky to find any shelter at all. There was no brazier in the hut, nor any place in which to make a fire. It was only a two-mat hut with a single door, but no window. Mozaku and Minokichi fastened the door and lay down to rest, with their straw raincoats over them. At first, they did not feel very cold, and they thought that the storm would soon be over. The old man almost immediately fell asleep, but the boy, Minokichi, lay awake a long time, listening to the awful wind and the continual slashing of the snow against the door. The river was roaring, and the hut swayed and creaked like a junk at sea. It was a terrible storm, and the air was every moment becoming colder, and Minokichi shivered under his raincoat. But, at last, in spite of the cold, he too fell asleep. He was awakened by a showering of snow in his face. The door of the hut had been forced open, and by the snow light, he saw a woman in the room, a woman all in white. She was bending above Mozaku and blowing her breath upon him, and her breath was like a bright, white smoke. Almost in the same moment she turned to Minokichi and stooped over him. He tried to cry out, but found that he could not utter any sound. The white woman bent down over him, lower and lower, until her face almost touched him. And he saw that she was very beautiful, though her eyes made him afraid. For a little time she continued to look at him. Then she smiled and she whispered, "I intended to treat you like the other man. But I cannot help feeling some pity for you because you are so young. You are a pretty boy, Minokichi, and I will not hurt you now. But if you ever tell anybody, even your own mother, about what you have seen this night, I shall know it, and then I will kill you. Remember what I say." With these words, she turned from him and passed through the doorway. Then he found himself able to move, and he sprang up and looked out. But the woman was nowhere to be seen, and the snow was driving furiously into the hut. Minokichi closed the door and secured it by fixing several billets of wood against it. He wondered if the wind had blown it open. He thought that he might have been only dreaming, and might have mistaken the gleam of the snowlight in the doorway for the figure of a white woman. But he could not be sure. He called to Mosaku and was frightened because the old man did not answer. He put out his hand in the dark and touched Mosaku's face and found that it was ice. Mosaku was stark and dead. By dawn, the storm was over, and when the ferryman returned to his station, a little after sunrise, he found Minokichi lying senseless beside the frozen body of Mosaku. Minokichi was promptly cared for and soon came to himself, but he remained a long time ill from the effects of the cold of that terrible night. He had been greatly frightened also by the old man's death, but he said nothing about the vision of the woman in white. As soon as he got well again, he returned to his calling, going alone every morning to the forest and coming back at nightfall with his bundles of wood, which his mother helped him to sell. One evening, in the winter of the following year, as he was on his way home, he overtook a girl who happened to be traveling by the same road. She was a tall, slim girl, very good-looking, and she answered Minokichi's greeting in a voice as pleasant to the ear as the voice of a songbird. Then he walked beside her, and they began to talk. The girl said that her name was Oyuki, that she had lately lost both of her parents, and that she was going to Yedo, where she happened to have some poor relations who might help her find a situation as a servant. Minokichi soon felt charmed by this strange girl, and the more that he looked at her, the handsomer she appeared to be. He asked her whether she was yet betrothed, and she answered laughingly that she was free. Then, in her turn, she asked Minokichi whether he was married or pledged to marry, and he told her that, although he had only a widowed mother to support, the question of an honorable daughter-in-law had not yet been considered, as he was very young. After these confidences, they walked on for a long while without speaking. But, as the proverb declares, "Kiga areba memo kuchi odo ni mono wo yu." When the wish is there, the eyes can say as much as the mouth. By the time they reached the village, they had become very much pleased with each other. And then Minokichi asked Oyuki to rest a while at his house. After some shy hesitation, she went there with him, and his mother made her welcome and prepared a warm meal for her. Oyuki behaved so nicely that Minokichi's mother took a sudden fancy to her and persuaded her to delay her journey to Yedo. And the natural end of the matter was that Yuki never went to Yedo at all. She remained in the house as an honorable daughter-in-law. Oyuki proved a very good daughter-in-law, When Minokichi's mother came to die some 5 years later, her last words were words of affection and praise for the wife of her son. And Oyuki bore Minokichi 10 children, boys and girls, handsome children, all of them, and very fair of skin. The country folk thought Oyuki a wonderful person, by nature different from themselves. Most of the peasant women age early, but Oyuki, even after having become the mother of 10 children, looked as young and fresh as on the day when she had first come to the village. One night, after the children had gone to sleep, Oyuki was sewing by the light of a paper lamp, and Minokichi, watching her, said, "To see you sewing there with the light on your face makes me think of a strange thing that happened when I was a lad of 18. I then saw somebody as beautiful and white as you are now. Indeed, she was very like you." Without lifting her eyes from her work, Oyuki responded, "Tell me about her. Where did you see her?" Then Minokichi told her about the terrible night in the ferryman's hut and about the white woman that had stooped above him, smiling and whispering, and about the silent death of old Mosaku, and he said, "Asleep or awake, that was the only time that I saw a being as beautiful as you." Of course, she was not a human being, and I was afraid of her, very much afraid. But she was so white. Indeed, I have never been sure whether it was a dream that I saw or the woman of the snow. Oyuki flung down her sewing and arose and bowed above Minokichi where he sat and shrieked into his face, "It was I, Yuki it was. And I told you then that I would kill you if you ever said one word about it. But for those children asleep there, I would kill you this moment. And now you had better take very, very good care of them. For if they ever have reason to complain of you, I will treat you as you deserve." Even as she screamed, her voice became thin, like a crying of wind. Then she melted into a bright white mist that spired to the roof beams and shuddered away through the smoke hold. Never again was she seen.
Patrick Hearn was known also by the Japanese name Kozumi Yakumo. He was an international writer best known for his books about Japan, especially his collection of Japanese legends and ghost stories. In the United States, Hearn was known for his writings about the city of New Orleans, based on his 10-year stay in that city. It was Japan, however, that he found a home and his greatest inspiration. Hearn took a teaching position during the summer of 1890 in Matsu, which is a town on the coast of the Sea of Japan. He became a naturalized Japanese citizen and assumed the name Yakumo. He would die in Tokyo in 1904, leaving 4 children to continue on.
Use Ajax, the foaming cleanser. Clean pots and pans, just like a whiz.
Ajax cuts grease faster than any other leading cleanser.
Do some pain, the elbow packs. When you start cleaning with Ajax.
Ajax really polishes as it cleans.
So use Ajax, bum, bum, the foaming cleanser. Both the dirt, right down the drain.
My gosh, they're right. Foaming action Ajax makes even the dirtiest pan shine like new in a jiffy.
So use Ajax.
Well, that that's it for this spooky show. Coming up this month, we will have a visit from composer and friend to the podcast, Kevin MacLeod. Also this month, if the dice roll right, the Horror Express will return with a brand new episode on haunted dolls. You won't want to miss either of those. If you want to keep up with what's happening on Ron's Amazing Stories, please follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or sign up for the weekly newsletter. All the links you'll need and access to the blog can be found at ronsamazingstories.com. Thank you for listening, and I hope you come again to find out what are Ron's Amazing Stories.
All of the vintage audio used in the podcast is believed to be in the public domain. Ron's Amazing Stories does not own the rights to any of the old-time radio used here. If you hold the rights to any of the shows played, please contact us immediately at ronsamazingstories.com.